The war in Ukraine is truly the first social media war, and Ukraine is winning. This is Brief Before Impact. Hey, welcome everyone to this episode. I am Matt Parker. It's good having you. Today's discussion is going to be on the subject of propaganda, especially during propaganda utilized during warfare. Obviously, I'll be highlighting, as I'm almost a case study, the current conflict in Ukraine between Ukraine and Russia, and how throughout history, propaganda has been used, especially in the context of Russia back in the Soviet era and into now in modern political times, and currently what Russia is providing its own people in terms of news reports and intelligence of activities on the ground in Ukraine, their perspective, their narrative that they're spinning on it, and why Russian people would be believing this narrative. We're going to utilize this as a pivot to Ukraine using social media in a way to garner so much international support to really challenge the world to respond to this aggressive action by Russia, and almost a call to action for its people and for its place in the world. And finally, we'll close out with courses of action and what we can likely see happening through the use of propaganda and social media on the Ukrainian conflict. Before we do, jump into a quick ad break and then we will get to work. Well, welcome back, everyone. Let me start off with a fantastic quote from one of the most source books in any military academy, the Art of War. It's frankly the ultimate book on strategy. It's written by Sun Tzu, a Chinese general and military strategist, hundreds of years old, but these lessons, they've lived on forever. The quote is this: appear weak when you are strong, and strong when you are weak. If anything, I think we can say about the Ukrainian people and its military prior to this conflict, it's, you would think it would be a relatively weak force. Compared to Russia, Ukraine spends like approximately a tenth on its budget, for its military budget, that is, compared to Russia. And it's non-nuclear power as well. It gave up its nuclear weapons back in post-fall of the Soviet Union in a deal with the West that America and the West would always protect Ukraine. It's kind of ironic how that's coming around. But the point is this: before this conflict broke out, I even said that in many regards, Ukraine military forces were just going to get crushed. And certainly they've taken some heavy losses, but boy, they've proven to be resilient in the face of Russian incompetence. Now, there's something incredibly important to understand. It's not just about the battles in life, really, but much of what people do is based upon perception. And it's not what is, but rather what we think it is. You all know what we talk about, this issue of perception we have. So when it comes to combat, battles are really games of deception. You know, each side tries to trick the other to making a mistake by showing them a different face. And if it's to your advantage to misperceive your opponent, if you can misperceive your opponent and to never attack your weak points and unknowingly run into your strong points, right? Again, Sun Tzu, one of his most famous quotes is, all warfare is based on deception. Hence, when we are able to attack, we must seem unable. When we're using our forces, we must appear inactive. When we are near, we must make the enemy believe we are far away. When we are far away, we must make him believe we are near. All what he's laying out here is, how do we deceive our opponent? And Ukraine was certainly appearing to be a weaker adversary compared to Russia. And this is how we've seen a tremendous use of propaganda benefiting the Ukrainian efforts inside of Ukraine. For example, what is propaganda really? It's just generally understood as a modern phenomenon. It's emerged from kind of the creation of politically active societies, you know, that are using mass media to inform their citizens. And so this is where governments increasingly saw the necessity just for swaying public opinion in favor of its policies. And I mentioned I want to kind of highlight the history of Russian propaganda in many ways. Let's look at the Soviet era. Soviet propaganda meant dissemination of revolutionary ideas, teachings of Marxism, theoretical, practical knowledge of Marxist economics. And now, while agitation really meant forming a favorable public opinion and stirring up political unrest, and those activities didn't carry a negative connotation, generally how we see them negatively in the English language, they were really encouraged, these types of activities. I mean, according to historian Peter Kinnis, the Russian socialists have contributed nothing to the theoretical discussion of the techniques of mass persuasion. The Bolsheviks never looked for and did not find devilishly clever methods to influence people's minds, to brainwash them. This is a fact that though the attempt was been made at to spread propaganda throughout its history, both the Soviet and post-Soviet era, the Russians haven't done it so well. But the point is, they've always been very intentional at maintaining the narrative, the flow of information inside their country, which is really an issue of just controlling society inside their country. According, in a more modern context, according to U.S. government publishing office, Russian nationals used different propaganda tools to interfere with the United States 2016 election between Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton. You've heard me talk about this before. Russia created political propaganda for the United States 2016 election to confuse voters from interpreting which news information was false or misleading. Different tactics used to interfere with that election use fake social media accounts on Twitter, Facebook, other sites, false political rallies, online political advertisements. Russian nationals used the new online propaganda, which is not to convince or persuade, but rather just to cause distraction or even paranoia. For the Select Committee on Intelligence in the United States Senate found that technology aided to providing more convincing and realistic propaganda. So from the Soviet era of spreading Marxist ideals to a modern context of using social media platforms, Russia has maneuvered and adjusted its methods for spreading misinformation, for spreading a certain narrative that benefits its efforts. And we've seen how its own Russian people are only fed a certain perspective on anything that Russia does. In the context of the most recent invasion inside Ukraine, Russia has doubled down on ensuring that the spread of information inside of Russia's borders are only what the Kremlin wants. According to Nell Clark for NPR, Russia has cracked down on free speech and placed strict propaganda controls on what citizens see and hear about the brutal war in Ukraine. Earlier this month, Vladimir Putin signed into a law that criminalizes reporting that contradicts the Russian government's version of events. The law has forced many independent media outlets to leave the country or just shut down, or they face potential lengthy prison terms. Julia Ioff, reporter for media company Puck, she mentioned that Russia is sanitizing the war to cloud its citizens' views. Quote, Russians are being told that Russian soldiers are extremely decorous and careful about preserving Ukrainian civil life. They're being greeted as liberators, that everybody wants to live under Russian rule, and there are no civilian casualties on the Ukrainian side. State media doesn't use the words war or invasion and doesn't mention Russia's bombing of Kiev. Anyone listening to this podcast knows that narrative being told to the Russian people is complete opposite of what's actually happening on the ground. And Clark continues writing that the Kremlin has weaponized social media, hiring trolls to spread disinformation about the war and stir up some fights online. Now, some Russians are turning to alternative sources for the truth and to break through the propaganda. Some use VPNs, virtual private networks, I'm sure you know what that is, to mask their locations to access blocked sites such as Twitter, Facebook, media organizations that report independently from the Kremlin. Ioff says that demand from VPNs shot up more than 2,000% on a single day. That was the day before the Putin regime shut off access to Instagram. Ioff continues that, but you have to understand that to go and do this, you already have to be looking. It's people who already don't believe what the Kremlin information sources are telling them. They know that this is a war against Ukrainian civilians. Now, all this means that the truth about the war, it's hard to find and mostly is discovered by people who already distrust the Kremlin and its state-sponsored media. Ioffe says that people who are not looking for that information, they're generally people who don't care, or people who trust Kremlin sources about information. And if they trust those sources of information, then they believe, for the most part, that the Kremlin is telling them is true. And they support the war. But the war they're supporting, and she makes this a specific comment, that war is not the war that exists on the ground in Ukraine. Meaning that the Russian narrative on what's happening inside Ukraine is not the actual course of events that's transpiring. And there's a point to that, to maintain that societal stability inside of Ukraine's borders, or sorry, inside of Russia's borders. And we've seen the crackdown on individuals protesting the war inside of Russia at Moscow or St. Petersburg. Thousands, and I'm not exaggerating, but thousands of individuals have been arrested, not allowing to protest the war. Because even calling it a war in Ukraine is complete opposite of what the Kremlin says, you know, that same narrative. And this is a point that Putin is emphasizing, is to maintain control over that society. Typically, autocratic leaders, when they are weak and their economy is weak and the country is weak, they have to ensure that their regime is not threatened. So they'll go through extreme lengths to ensure that stability exists and that their power remains intact. Now, when you compare Russia's efforts to Ukraine's, they are just complete opposite on the propaganda and in the social media war realm. If you've been watching, some of the highlights have been coming from inside Ukraine. I'm talking about just regular civilian footage to the military combat footage we're seeing. Even President Zelensky himself, you would have to admire the resilience and the fight inside the hearts of the Ukrainian people. Zelensky, who's now got a pretty full-blown beard and does all these briefings in mostly just T-shirts because he's constantly on the move and he's not got the place to wear a suit or look like some kind of high-ranking government official. He's fighting for his life. There are actively Russian special operation units trying to target him and kill him. So he's leading from the front in many ways by accessing the platforms of social media available to him and spreading his message, the message of the Ukrainian people, asking for help, showing real stories of individuals in villages all over that country who have stood up to Russian soldiers, you know, who have fought back. You've seen grandmas training with Ukrainian soldiers if they have to pick up an AK-47 and defend themselves. You know, this is literally the fight for the life. That is the message they're trying to promote on social media. And they're doing, quite frankly, a brilliant job at it. How many people, yourself, anyone who's listening, could say you've seen something that's pro-Ukraine, not coming just from, you know, a mainstream news outlet, but something you saw on social media, you know, a post about, you know, a Russian helicopter being shot down, or these babies that were in a hospital being scooped into a basement just to be protected from the bombing of Russian artillery. You know, these are messages encouraging us, you know, kind of really pulling on our heartstrings to see from the Ukrainian side that these are just innocent people trying to live their lives and they're being attacked by a Russian aggressor. For example, Sarah Sicard, writing for the Military Times, highlights that though its troops in Ukraine face what would call an insurmountable challenge from the Russian military, Ukrainian media, with the help of organic reach, is currently winning the hearts and minds of people in the Western world with tales of old ladies standing up to the Russian troops, 80-year-old grandfathers volunteering to fight, army snipers, and one brave soul who punched a convoy of a Russian trucks in the face. The veracity of these stories have proven impossible to independently verify as firefights rage across the country. But the enigmatic nature of these stories, the author Peter Singer wrote the Like War, the Weaponization of Social Media. He highlights that these type of stories might actually be helping the cause. And he says it is more about the story of a hero fighting back against the odds than his name or even the truth of the story. And I think this is completely true. I think there's been a lot of reports coming out on social media that's probably completely fake and made up, and then scattered with some true stories. But overall, they're telling the story that's really encouraging about the Ukrainian fight against the Russians. You feel like you're on the side of the Ukrainians, that these are just normal folks trying to get along and they're fighting back. And whether these victories are true or partially true, they're taking advantage of this new technology. This is a new way of warfare we've never really seen. We know that propaganda and misinformation and so forth has been used for centuries, for that matter. But in this way, it's so accessible. Everybody can touch it via their smartphone and via access to the internet. Now, Russia's failure to change that global narrative about the war, in part, really stems from how Ukraine is actively fighting back online. Mark Scott for Politico writes that Zelensky, Ukraine's president, has used his massive digital following to talk directly to his countrymen and to those outside Ukraine's borders, gaining international support for leading from the front against the Russian invasion. Viral social media posts of soldiers getting married or average citizens picking up arms in defense of their families have also captured the imagination of a global audience in a conflict that is playing out online and in real time. Yet, Kiev, or those who support of its cause, have also taken kind of a page out of the Kremlin's book when it comes to online propaganda. The goal, according to the official briefed on Ukraine's plans, was to take its messaging directly to the Russian people by sidestepping Putin's information machine. For example, there's this predominantly Russian language social media platform, VK, and pro-Ukrainian posts have flooded the platform to highlight the targeting of civilians within the country. They have used hashtags associated with the conflict to reach a wide audience within Russia, according to Western disinformation experts. Such digital combat has similarly been used in Iraq, where dueling Islamic State and pro-government forces have posted in each other's Facebook groups in coordinated attempt to demoralize their rivals. On Facebook, which the Kremlin blocked last week inside of Russia, Facebook, which still can be accessed within Russia via, these VPNs, those that have seen accounts supportive of Ukraine have brought reams of social media ads aimed at Russians. Politico's review of Facebook transparency tools highlight that these paid-for messages show brutal images of war, attack Putin and his policies, and played videos of Russian prisoners of war. There is no doubt that social media has really allowed this war to be documented in a way that wasn't previously possible. It's truly the first social media war. I mean, frankly, the COVID-19 pandemic is the first pandemic that we've ever seen in a social media world. And what happened in both these scenarios? Everywhere around the world, you could hear these stories. You could hear these examples of the spread of this, the spread of COVID. Now we see this next conflict, the spread of gunfights throughout the country of Ukraine, and normal Ukrainians, average citizens fighting back. Anybody with a smartphone can chronicle their story, which allows misinformation or even disinformation just to flow faster than ever. Close out with a few courses of action of how, in my view, we'll see social media and propaganda continue to propagate the messages in this conflict. Most likeliest course of action is Ukraine just going to continue to utilize social media to tell stories of the people and battlefield victories. Those two items, telling the stories of the people and what they in the battles that have been won. Because the stories help you, the viewer, relate to those people you've never met. And the second, the battlefield victories, gives you the hope to continue supporting their efforts however you can. Now, the most dangerous course of action, in my view, would be intentional disinformation leaked that would cause either NATO or another global power supporting Russia to escalate the conflict beyond its current scope, to basically get more involved. I mean, for example, there's a video of a biological weapon attack from Russia on Ukrainian babies at a hospital. What kind of action would that spur from NATO? I'm not sure. I'm really throwing out a hypothetical. Or what would be on the flip side, for example, what if there was a faked attack from Ukrainian forces inside Belarus That would give it this whole option, this opportunity to fully engage in the war. Both of these examples I'm talking about could be completely false, utilizing social media to spread this message. And what would happen? That message, true or not, would spread around the world in a heartbeat very quickly. Sources, obviously, media outlets would start trying to verify the truth or not. But in some regards, the story's already been told and that the hook's already been sunk. It's possible that other countries could buy in to one side or the other and tensions could be escalated. Thanks for tuning in. Hope you enjoyed this episode. And of course, as always, I hope you are picking up what I'm putting down. I am Matt Parker. This is Brief Before Impact.